Welcome to Canada's Podcast.
Hi, everybody. I'm Phil Bliss, founder and CEO of Canada's Podcast. Today, we're going to meet Mick Lauft, who's CEO and co-founder of Shemar, a Manitoba-based biotech company, and they're on a mission to change how the world prevents, detects, and treats type 2 diabetes. Shemar wants to create a world where type 2 diabetes and the conditions that lead to it can be prevented and reversed through transformative science and by engaging individuals in their own wellness. After 9 years, the company and its research have made great strides. So let's find out more. Welcome to Canada's Podcast. I think there's going to be some real interesting bits here for people to listen to. So like hang in, guys, because there's some very interesting content. And before we get too deep into the conversation, just tell us a little bit about yourselves, you know, what you're doing and why we're sitting here, you know, talking to each other.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. Thanks for giving us a chance to tell the story. So I'm the co-founder and the CEO of Shemar. We're a private Canadian biotech that's focused on changing how we understand and treat type 2 diabetes.
That's about it. Okay. but you know, how the heck did you get there? We know that you're running the company, but there's some deeper story.
There's a bit more to it. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. We like to say we're a startup 14 years in the making. So let me take you back to some of the origins there. So I grew up in a household with two university professors. My mother was professor of sociology, criminology, and worked in a number of women focused initiatives in the community, and a real role model for social and kind of holistic wellness. And my father, scientific research, his whole life, basic research, discovery science, and a professor and such. And his focus at the time was on the liver. In fact, he was his team was responsible for determining the signaling response that allows the liver to regrow if you take a portion out of it. Yeah. So kind of that was my upbringing in terms of what I listened to at night and everything else, right? And so, you know, I was very focused on community. I wasn't into sciences. I went through school, started a company that worked with at-risk youth and did wilderness therapy and adventure-based stuff. I had a kayaking school, a whitewater kayaking instructor and an expedition member. I still do that to today. And then I started working with, core groups and all kinds of remote communities and stuff on social skills and life and all kinds of stuff. Right? But it was always the entrepreneurial side of me was about finding something that I could contribute and something I was passionate about and then creating something that was missing in order to, you know, contribute. Right. So that's kind of, you know, a couple other businesses later, I sold those other first businesses and I spent about 20 years doing corporate leadership training, development, management training and such for a number of different groups and under my own banner as well. And then paying more attention as a young adult to the science that was coming home out of my father's lab and starting to think, oh, this is, you know, I got to start focusing here because when you're a kid, your parents come home and they tell you all this stuff and you don't really pay much attention, right? But you know, he had discovered there's a hormone that's missing for a type 2 diabetic. And he started doing that work to figure out what it was and how it works. And, you know, we were listening to him tell us about these tools that he was developing for the basic science, you know, and realizing like, hey, that's a diagnostic that you've developed. That's a preventative nutraceutical. And there's a therapeutic, you've reversed the diabetic state in those experiments. And so we started paying more attention and so did other people. And as that was happening, he was starting to work on like, how do we take this to the world? Right. And from an academic perspective, he wanted to just publish it and give it away and tell the world. And he thought that would make the difference. Right. And that's not how it works. Right. So we started working with some business folks and I was paying attention to that as an entrepreneur and thinking, yeah, these aren't necessarily the right folks, maybe not the right approach. They don't quite get it. They're not in for the long haul. And so after him hearing me saying that enough times, I think he kind of put it back on me to say, hey, well, then let's, you know, why don't you take it on? And I kind of had to stop and go, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? And we decided as a family in 2009 to form SciMar to take this breakthrough science to market. Mm-hmm. And committed to some multi-generation project. And boy, we've been heads down since that time, and all kinds of other stories around what the last 14 years have been like. But that's been our commitment. That was kind of how we got here and why we started it. And Phil, I think the important thing for us is that my background is not in science. Mm-hmm. You know, working with at-risk youth, working in the wilderness as a tool, working in leadership and training, community building, all kinds of things. I sat on a lot of volunteer boards, founded a few adventure-based clubs and such. And, you know, so me, it was about building community and health and wellness from a real holistic perspective. So mm-hmm. when we all came together, and again, with my mother's background, sociology, criminology, the three of us came together and decided for the first 5-6 years to bootstrap this thing. We came at it from a really different approach. We didn't want to just create a pill or get an indication and sell and move on. We really wanted to just solve the problem. And so we really ingrained that in the core philosophy. So everything we've done since then has been about solving this problem through this breakthrough science, mm-hmm. creating medical interventions that work, because currently we're, exponential growth in type 2 diabetes, and medical interventions are not effective right now. But also looking at, like, why did we get here in the first place? So, what's going on with mental health? What about food security? What about, access to care? And so we've really been working with a lot of partners along the way. We have our commercial path moving forward, but we're really trying to be quite disruptive in the conversations we're having, because it's an urgent and pressing need. I mean, people should really be quite upset about where we're moving in the direction we're going. If we don't deal with this, it's not sustainable and it's not acceptable. So that's what drives us. That's what drives me. That's how I got really engaged.
Stay ahead of the game with our expert tips and strategies that will help your business thrive in a digital era. CanadasPodcast.com. Subscribe now.
But one of the things, as I was reading a little bit about the company, is the family business side of things. I bump into it every so often. When you were outside of the family business for a while, running your own business, what's different between an entrepreneur in a family business and an entrepreneur, in not necessarily a solopreneur, but in a business that's not doesn't have a family attachment?
Yeah. So before I tell you the answer to that, Phil, you have to promise that my parents won't listen to this podcast. So, and then I can tell you the truth. Otherwise, I have to say, no. I mean, it's a great question, and it's interesting. It's a really interesting question and a dynamic. When we first started, it was something we were a little shy to talk about because, mm-hmm. It doesn't look great, right? We started a company and you got dad as your chief scientific officer. You got mom as a legal consultant strategist. Mm-hmm. You're the two founders and kind of bootstrapping, paying the bills. And then you got this son that's now the acting CEO. And like, what does he know about science? And I mean, but I'm comfortable with that story because we've demonstrated we've got an amazing skill set within the family. But more so, when we made those decisions, we made the decisions based on who we really felt were the best people to take on those roles based on the skill sets. Now, I'm fortunate that I come from a family that has some pretty amazing folks in it, and I think. I get to kind of pull them together and put them in their roles, and then kind of stand back and let them do their thing. But interesting, in 2015, I've been talking to my brother-in-law for years. So this is another extension of the family story. He was brilliant. He was part of the Silicon Valley startup scene, responsible for coding a bunch of billion-dollar projects, like literally. And then moved into some consulting work, and met my sister and moved to Canada, and worked his way up through consulting and such. And for years I kept saying to him, John, I'm going to need you soon. At some point, I'm going to need you to kind of take this to the next level, but not yet. I mean, we got bootstrapping, we got IP to deal with, we got all kinds of stuff to figure out, right? In 2015, I said, hey, it's time to come over. I need you. And he was running the Pacific coast of IBM, some large region and some sophisticated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he jumped over for a couple of years and joined us with no salary, just bootstrapped the same way that we were all doing at the time, and, you know, made a commitment to do this work. And again, so it's like, it's crazy because he was the perfect guy for the job. And it wasn't just that I could get him to work for free for a while, but he's brilliant. And he's been an incredible contributor as my chief development officer now. And so, you know, so that was another dynamic. And by that time, though, we were quite comfortable. We had our science teams back, and we had, we'd been bringing the science folks back, and we engage with a variety of real, specialists in a number of areas that we needed. But, you know, the core of the mission was still something that we were kind of hoisting on the shoulders of the family, right? And we decided this was what we were going to do. And it's a multi-generation project, and we understand the science and the mission, and we're committed to it. And we're not going to deviate from the values and the mandate that we created for ourselves. And it's interesting as I look back and say, you know, look at a lot of the most successful businesses in Canada, and they're run by families. You know, they have family origins, you know, and so if you can make it work, it can be fantastic, right? It could also be incredibly challenging. Am I surprised we made it work? I'm not sure. I'm not necessarily surprised. I'm delighted. And it's been an absolute superpower for us to be able to have my family and those folks in the room. You know, it wasn't that in 2018, when people expected for me, we did an external round of fundraising at the time. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to kind of move to the next level of organization sophistication and, you know, governance. And so we, you know, set up our board a little differently. Sure. And people expected that I was going to, as a founder, I would take on the role of, you know, president and CEO and all that. And that's not best practice. I think, you know, there needs to be a governance structure that you hold yourself accountable for performance and not, you know, control governance at the same time kind of thing. And so I was looking around thinking about, you know, who the people are in my life that were, the highest kind of governance experts in my life. And guess what? My sister at the time was running a massive overhaul in BC Hydro, and she's a governance expert. And so I thought, I'd always said, you know, to her, hey, how am I going to get her involved without having to pay her, you know, her consulting salary? And I thought, I know, we're going to get you to be the chair of the board. And so then I started reporting to her. And it's been absolutely phenomenal to work with people that are committed and passionate, but also the perfect people for those roles. And the family dynamic has not really gotten in the way. I mean, we've had to have some conversations and have some role clarity, but, you know, my father and my mother report to me in the corporate structure, right? But yet they're founders and they're board members. So it's very interesting. But we made it work, and it's part of our strength.
What do you see as the biggest challenge you've got in the future, say the next 5 years?
Well, funding is always a challenge. When you're changing, challenging a deeply entrenched paradigm in anything, it's... you're often out on the front, you know, on the frontier, kind of on your own, pushing against, everyone, and pushing a lot of weight forward, or carrying a lot of weight forward. And so the funding aspect is also, you know, really always been a challenge. You know, we've gotten around that by aligning ourselves with mission-driven investors, very sophisticated individuals, but not in a, you know, venture capital type of structure, because we need to maintain control and direction of this project for the next, you know, 10, 15 years, if we really want to get all the way to completing our mission. So it's been really important to not just take money, but to align ourselves with the appropriate investors. And that's taken longer, but it's allowed us to be successful and stay on track. So that's a challenge. You know, and these days, the last few years, the markets have been really challenging. You know, in biotech, you're pre-revenue for years. You know, you go through your preclinical and then your clinical trials, and you move forward and forward. And at the end, you get to market, and that's great. But for years, your value goes up because you're getting closer and closer to these massive, you know, market potential. But you're pre-revenue, so it's an interesting place to be. And a lot of funding goes towards growth versus innovation. So, anyways, the funding story is always a challenge. I think, and going back to kind of my personal story, I think I've been challenged in the past, really ensuring that I find balance in, you know, driving this, you know, personal lifelong mission but also maintaining focus on the fact that I have a family outside of my origin, my family of origin, which includes my parents and my in-laws and my brother, you know, my brother-in-law and my sister. My family of origin is all in, right? And, you know, we're burning the boats, right? You know, Madigan's uses that term. But I have my primary family, my wife and my two sons. I mean, that's an interesting piece because, you know, they kind of get sucked into this entrepreneurial mission. And so that's been a really interesting thing for me to try to be more aware of is how do we maintain balance as entrepreneurs? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't sign a contract for everybody in your life if, you know, not everybody wants you to burn the boats. In fact, most people, some of them don't want to go across the sea in the first place, you know. So it's an interesting element of, you know, balance and wellness for me. And I think I do a pretty good job of taking care of myself in terms of health and, you know, engaging in the community and spending time outdoors and that kind of stuff. Right. But, you know, it's a challenge. And I think it's a challenge for anybody. And it's a challenge for our staff. Right. Because we've got people that are, you know, heads down. Everybody's so excited about our mission and getting this out there. But we often make sure that we role model what we preach about health and mm-hmm. wellness from a holistic perspective. So I think those two things are important. You know, technology is something that we're actually able to leverage. So that's really not a hindrance, but it's kind of the more human side of things that we have to always keep track of.
Join our thriving community of like-minded individuals who share a passion for success and innovation. Canada'sPodcast.com. Subscribe now.
In a family business, just curious, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received? It's like, from your parents, from someone outside, advice as it relates to business, let's say.
Wow. Ensure you have clarity on what your North Star is, your mission, your vision, mm-hmm. and build everything around that. You know, what is your why? You know, that's your mission. And if you've got clarity on that and it's important, and it has, you know, valuable impact and will impact other people in a really positive way. I know, you know, all the entrepreneurial, jargon around, you know, what are your pain points and what solutions are you providing or problems are you solving? Those type of things. And that's all true. Absolutely. But I think for us, really, it's that bigger picture. And what are we really trying to change in the world? What are we trying to do? And, you know, you don't always have an opportunity to do that as a business owner, right? Or as an entrepreneur. You know, this is why it is so important for us. Like this kind of fell, it didn't fall in our laps, although it was a bit of an accident that happened in the lab that, you know, because he was working on the liver, right? So not the pancreas, not insulin. So he, you know, he didn't expect this to happen. He looked at it and said, oh my gosh, there's this thing that no one's, you know, seen before. And so, but, you know, as for myself, as an entrepreneur, I looked at this and said, you know, this aligns with my values. This aligns with the impact I'm trying to have in the world. And, you know, and individually, like we, you know, we're on the front lines. We're collaborating with grassroots initiatives. We're really trying to be out there and be authentic, as well as bring products to market that will change the global scene, the healthcare scene, right? So there's not a lot of opportunities in your life where you get to have that. And, you know, that's a hard path to decide to follow because it's a very, you know, it's a big thing to do. But I found for myself, it just was something I wasn't willing to not pick up and take on. So I think for me, the lesson that I've learned over the years, and, you know, I've been told it before, I've told other people before, it's reinforced all the time, my team talks about it, is, you know, figure out very clearly what you're trying to achieve, the impact you're trying to have, the experience you want to have with people when they experience you and interact with you and the long-term vision, and then align everything you're doing around that. And that will get you through the hard times. That will help guide your decision-making when you're, you know, when there's ethics involved and everything else. You just take the higher ground all the time, focus on what you're trying to achieve, and that'll guide you in every difficult decision as a business owner.
Okay, it's interesting. You know, okay, you've been at this one since 2009, but it wasn't your first business.
No.
And you sold, you built and sold, other businesses. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give, you know, entrepreneurs, you know, they're at that beginning of the process, you know, they want to start a business. Is there something you've learned in terms of starting the business and maintaining it, if you like, and building it. You kind of covered that a little bit, but not from that perspective.
I guess I'll take a kind of a maybe a thread of the of my first answer. In that when I was starting the first business, and prior to that, I had been part of or had created like new programs or new opportunities. You know, kind of created something out of nothing. Well, I shouldn't say out of nothing, but you know, we're based on, you know, stand on the shoulders of the person before you reach a little higher and you bring everybody with you, right? And but I think for me, what it was like, what is my personal mission? Like, yeah, and that's a mission statement that evolves. I think it should. You kind of go back to it, kind of trying to figure out, like, what are you trying to achieve? How are you trying to contribute, right? What do you want to do? What are you good at? And maybe what are you also the best at or unique at? And if you can align all those things and it's something that you're passionate about at the same time, then that gives you the fuel to keep going. Because as an entrepreneur or a business owner, you sure need to be motivated by more than just getting in the door every morning and closing up shop at night and the money that comes in, because it's so hard. There's a lot of work, and there's a lot of times where, you know, you're putting a lot at risk. You're impacting your family, your friends, your community, right? Your health, your well-being, all that. So you have to find something that you're good at, that you're passionate about, that you understand in terms of the impact you're trying to make. And it's aligned with your personal mission, right? And it doesn't have to be something global or dramatic. I mean, it could be that every day you go into serve a coffee and you want to, you know, make that person's life a little better by being happy and supportive and finding something to be complimentary about, or give them the best experience in that 5 minutes when they're holding that fresh roast and they smell it in the atmosphere you've created. However, that whatever that is, right? Take pride in it. But if you decide that's what you want to do, then you know, I think you just got to start doing it, right? That's the other aspect. Is I hear a lot of people dream. But, you know, the plans that are necessary to actually execute and then going ahead and taking that first step, those are difficult. And I think people wait till they feel like they are qualified or they know what they're doing or it's a clear path. And I think you just got to take a step and you keep going. We take that approach with, you know, conversations that we have been starting and have had for years with our Indigenous partnerships. And looking at what that looks like. I mean, as a corporate entity, we're trying to be role modeling what we feel is, you know, business, you know, community reconciliation and economics and those types of philosophies, and going like, what does that even mean? So we're working with those communities to do that, and we're taking those steps and trying not to make mistakes, and we're, you know, being authentic about it. So I think that's how we need to approach any business, is to be authentic, put your best self forward, have the courage to keep moving forward, be open to learning, right? But focus on, like, what are you trying to achieve? And then align your skill set and your passion and your resources to doing it. And then you got to keep going. You got to keep going, right?
Is building a medical enterprise harder in Canada, you think, than other areas?
Yes.
What makes it hard? What makes it hard?
I will go back to funding. You know, we're not great at funding innovation. Mm-hmm. I think there's opportunities to fund growth.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you need to innovate for 10 years or 15 years in the life sciences, that's challenging to be. So that's one aspect of it, right? And there hasn't been a lot of money put into, I mean, there has been, but I mean, I think it could be spent a little differently. And you know, in terms of research and innovation and that kind of thing, I think there's a disconnect between the academic world and in the industry world. There's a real gap there. And so I know there are a lot of initiatives out there trying to close that gap, but it's still there. Absolutely. So if you don't have the skill set yourself on that team that can, you know, bridge the gap, it's really a sticky place to be. So I think that's a challenging part of it. I think, you know, part of the challenges we face is, as a Canadian, is that sometimes people, you know, are kind of questioning, you know, where you fit in the larger stage, right? So you kind of come out of like Winnipeg, Manitoba, and say, we've got this massive breakthrough. And I've literally had people say, well, did it happen in Harvard or did it happen in this other place? And we're saying, well, there's been a tremendous amount of breakthroughs happening in Manitoba. I mean, you University of Manitoba, you've done all these places, right? So there is that part there. And then I think the other thing about Canada is that we've got this really rigorous rigorous regulatory process, which is fantastic. Health Canada is one of the top, you know, in the world. And, you know, for nutraceuticals, for example, getting a permit to sell a nutraceutical, a natural product number, it takes, you know, a minimum of 12 months, and it's a very rigorous process. So it sets a very high bar, which is kind of a moat for competition, right? Which is good. But it's a high bar, which I like, but it definitely makes it difficult to get there. Now, what it does, though, is that if people say that they know that you've been, you know, had a green light from Health Canada, it opens up a lot more international opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a bad thing, but I think certainly it slows people down. And the timeline, like the efficiencies of that, it takes 6 months to get an approval done on something, or it takes a year to get some, you know. So I think the timeline can be more efficient. I think the process is rigorous, and that's really important. But I think things take a lot of time, and there's not a lot of funding that is provided to support your journey.
With over 700 episodes and 500 news articles, we are your go-to source for all things entrepreneurship. CanadasPodcast.com. Subscribe now.
So, you know, the challenge side of it, the mm-hmm. build side of it. Have you developed a process that you step through to overcome, to get round the wall, over the wall, whatever? Have you kind of got a process on that side of things?
You know, for just general, like the big hurdles, like the challenges you face, you kind of have to tackle the top five type thing. Yeah. Absolutely. It's having the right team. You know, for me, that's my superpower, is my team. You know, so don't tell everybody that. It's it's incredible. In a lot of ways, that's my role, right? I'm as a co-founder and a CEO. I mean, my job is to bring people together and identify those people that we need to bring in. I mean, our foundation is science, but we also have a foundation of values and culture. Right. And so there's this level of bringing people on that fit that, right? And creating that sense of trust in there. And then you can move forward together through those hurdles, right? So you can have that conflict in the house. You can make plans, and people stick to it, and you know, people are accountable for their actions, all that kind of thing, right? So there's lots of models that talk about how that works. But for us, it's really daily, right? We understand what our processes are and the roles we play, but it's having the right people. So, you know, one of the things I learned, and this isn't my saying, I've heard it from a number of people, so I'm not going to drop names on it, but the saying around, an A player hires A players, right? A B player hires C players. And the idea with that is that for me, I consider myself an A player. I think I'm, you know, good at what I do. And I certainly hold myself accountable to that level of performance and ability. But the trick is that I find people that are, you know, as good or better at the gaps that I have and bring those on board. Right. And then my role is to support them, provide the resources, the guidance, the vision, the structures and everything else. But then support them and then kind of get out of their way. I mean, obviously there's a verification side of things, but it has to be based on trust. So I think for me, that's really been what's allowed us to be so successful, because I've got this amazing team of scientists, and I've got this amazing team of business leaders and business analysts and project managers and branding people and people that can write, creative directors, right? And we have investors as well that are aligned with us, right? So people I can call up and say, hey, you know, I have a question about, you know, how shares need to be structured in order to deal with this tax consequence or going forward with this next round. What do you think? And those are all people that have expertise. They bring and contribute because they're all on the team and looking after, you know, our focus, which is collective success. We're trying to solve a problem.
Yeah.
So that North Star brings us together. And then my job is to support that super team to play the roles they play. And that's the trick. It's you bring the right team on board and kind of get out of their way.
Let's get on to some great insights the last 25 minutes. Let's get some fun that we bring to the end of it.
Okay.
Just some rapid fire questions. Yeah, I do have some of those. Are you a morning or a night person?
Night, I guess.
Night?
Oh no, this is going to be really hard. I'm going to overthink everything. I'm more. If I can get up and I haven't been up too late, I'm a morning person. I like mornings better, but I stay. Okay, I'll try to stay. Keep it short. Keep me to the next one.
If you were doing what you're doing now, what would you be doing instead, and why?
More whitewater kayaking.
I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah, that's my personal passion, and it's taking me all over the world, and it gives me great strength and insight. So that's a big part of who I am. Whitewater kayaking.
If you had to pick one word to describe yourself, what would it be? And again, why would you choose it?
One word.
Mm-hmm.
Intense. I think I'm pretty focused on the things that I'm doing, and I like challenges and that. So I think intense is one of the many words that I think I'd like to use.
Okay. What book are you currently reading?
I think it's called Beyond the North, and it's about a Canadian explorer that is traveling solo across the territories by canoe.
What's keeping you up at night?
Resources, always looking after the next layer, funding, I think that's the biggest thing. It's an ongoing, last few years has been ongoing. So I think funding and ensuring that we have the resources for my team to do the work that's so important.
That's good. I think you've answered some really good answers there, some really good insights.
But Phil, I was waiting for an answer because when you said it was going to be like a fast question thing, I the first answer came to my mind without even hearing it. I was going to say Led Zeppelin. There's no fit for it. And I was like, I got to fit that in there.
That's intense too. So that you're right. That Zeppelin would be there. Yeah.
Well, that's fun. I haven't done a lot of those. I think they're quite hard. I have more empathy for people now that are asked to answer those questions in a few words. That's very difficult. But it's a fun way to end it. Thanks.
Thanks for the interview, Mick. Really, really, really fun interview. How can people get a hold of you? Because, they listen, they view it, and they hear something and they want to follow up.
Absolutely. So I'll give two ways. One is go to the website, cimar.ca. That's cimar.ca. And you can learn all about what we're doing, how to invest, all those types of things. But then if you want to connect with me directly, find me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Yeah. And I love to chat and tell our story and see where we can align and keep all of our collective missions moving forward.
Mick, thanks for coming on the Canada's podcast. Been a good session.
Thanks, Phil. It's been fun.